Hi, good morning, Miami Beach, and welcome to the January 24th meeting of the Planning Board for the City of Miami Beach. We're going to open with our board attorney, Nick Kalergis, to give us a little bit of instruction with regards to how to participate in the meeting. We do offer the meeting in two formats, which he'll go into now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the board. Today's meeting of the Planning Board has been scheduled in a hybrid format with members of the board physically present at Miami Beach City Hall and applicant staff and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. To participate virtually, members of the public may dial 1-877-853-5257 and enter the webinar ID, which is 861-4342-6327#, or log in directly to the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 861-4342-6327. Anyone wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon in the Zoom app or dial *9 if they're participating by phone. Next, I'll read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness, providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. Lastly, I'd like to swear in any members of staff and any members of the public who will be testifying today on any quasi-judicial applications. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see.
Administratively, I'm going to move to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Elias, second by Mr. Brantley, and I'll do a roll call. Ms. Bott is absent. Mr. Brantley?
Yes.
Mr. Cement is absent. Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Jalpi?
Yes.
Motion passes.
And let's jump down to, so we already done the swearing in the public. Other business, we have the election every year at the top of the year. It's my understanding that we have to elect the chair, vice chair for the board. So at this time, we would just take nominations. Or Nick, do you normally conduct this? I can't remember. It's been so long.
I can help facilitate. We can do it now.
Yeah, let's do it now.
Okay. So the first step is for board members to make any nominations. So anyone would like to nominate themselves or another board member, you can do so now.
I would like to nominate Tanya Bott.
Okay. Are there any other nominations?
I would nominate Brian Elias.
Okay.
All right, seeing none.
So we can do one of two things. We could do written ballots where each member writes who they'll be voting for.
Let's do that.
And okay.
Now, she's not here to accept, but I assume she would.
So I'll give everybody a piece of paper.
No, that's not.
And so on your ballot, write your name at the top and who you're voting for. And then we'll collect the ballots and read off each vote.
Wait, are we really going to vote with just five of us here and two people not here?
That's up to the board.
I think we should wait for at least Tanya to get here, or we should wait for next month.
Well, she's parking, so we can do that. I'm just afraid to get into too much of a item and then have to do it so far later into the meeting. But I tell you what, let's take the Washington Avenue item. That'll give Tanya time to get up here, okay. And then we'll come back to this. But stay ready with the paper so we could dispense of this quickly.
For the discussion item, we have some staff here. Mr. Cement is going to be absent today. He asked that the item be heard next month so that he can participate. He's one of the members that requested that we have a discussion on special event permits. And he sent me an email requesting that the board continue the item to next month if the board is willing to accept that.
The only thing I would say is how much of an inconvenience is it for staff to come to the next meeting? I appreciate wanting him, Mr. Cement, to be here as well, but I also understand the efforts that they've put in for today. And
hey, John, when you asked the question, they were like, no problem, hey, listen, all that stuff on my desk, don't even worry about it. I'll be here. Let me know with bells on and everything. You know, they were like, we'll be back. You know.
So do we have to move to continue?
If we can have a motion to continue the item, and
sure.
I'll move to continue.
Okay.
I second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Moved by Jonathan and seconded.
So that'll be continued to the February, what is the 28th meeting?
28th. And Gail seconded.
Okay, and
here's Ms. Bach.
We can do that by acclamation.
Eight okay. Time,
yeah. All right, so we can stay in order then. Give me a second, Michael. We're gonna do this so we can.
Which one?
If you could just have a seat one second. So you've been nominated for chair. Do you accept, I guess, is the...
Both of us were, you and
yeah,
I.
Yeah, you and... yeah, sorry.
So two nominations were made for... We were just starting this. For the position of chair. And the two nominations were Tanya Bott and Brian Elias. And the way we do this when there's more than one nominee for a position is we hand out paper ballots. I'm writing your last names at the top. And then you would write who you're voting for as chair, and then return them to us, and we'll read out the ballots out loud.
Okay. So the answer to your question is yes.
Okay, absolutely.
Thank you. Should we do vice chair on there to kill two birds with one stone?
Sure, we can do that.
And do we have any nominations for vice chair so we can go ahead and save some paper and use the same ballot?
Let's do them one and two just because depending on the first one.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Well, we'll pass them back out.
Sorry. We'll just tear them in half.
Just tear the
paper in half. We'll do two halves.
That's fine.
Or we can say whoever doesn't win automatically gets the vice chair.
Well, they may not want to do it.
Oh, though. All right.
Okay.
But that makes sense to me, Gail. I'm just saying the person may not want to.
Okay. Do you want me to hand them out?
You got it? So we can do that.
That's better to do this.
I can come get them. That's it? Okay. Okay. Is that everybody? Okay. Okay, so I'll read the ballots out loud, and Raelio, you're keeping track?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so Mr. Gelpie cast his vote for chair for Brian Elias. Mr. Frieden for Brian Elias.
We should have just did an oral vote. Never mind. Go ahead. Continue. You've started in the direction.
Okay. Ms. Durham cast her vote for Tanya Bott. Mr. Elias cast his vote for Brian Elias. Mr. Brantley cast his vote for Brian Elias. And Ms. Bott cast her vote for Tanya Bott.
Okay, so Mr. Elias, you have been selected as the chair.
So okay.
Did everybody already do the vice chair on their paper too?
No. Okay. So what we can do now is take nominations for vice chair.
I'm nominated Tanya.
Okay. Are there any other nominations?
I second that, whatever, if it needs a second.
Okay, in that case, I don't think there's any need for another written ballot if there are no other nominations.
Perfect.
Right? So I would suggest the board adopt a motion appointing Tanya Bott as vice chair.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
All right.
Switching seats. You have to do it now.
I'm in.
Oh, boy. You're funny.
I'm going to sit over here. I've been...
That's really funny.
Freedom.
Can I leave my charger over?
Yeah, you can. Okay, so we moved special event discussion till next month, you said?
That's correct.
Okay, so we're at the Michael, are you here for the revocation hearing?
The modification hearing, yes.
Okay. Go ahead. All right, we're on planning board file 160075, revocation modification hearing for the Good Time Hotel, 601 to 685 Washington Avenue.
Okay, so for this item, we just handed out staff reports for you, and we had emailed them to you last week. We forgot to include them in the printed packet. So for an update, at the November meeting, the planning board heard the revocation modification hearing. They struck one of the conditions, condition 10A11, related to audio being heard in the interior of residential units, particularly the vibrations. So that condition was removed due to difficulties in how the vibrations could be enforced. And then the planning board continued the item to December. In our staff report, we indicated that there were two noise complaints. However, there were no violations. Those took place on December 21st and December 31st. However, we've just been made aware of a violation that was issued on January 20th, so 4 days ago. And we have Manny Villar from Code Enforcement here if you have any questions on that violation. An officer received a complaint at the building on 635 Euclid Avenue, went into the unit, and the sound was audible from that unit. So there is a violation. We were just made aware of that. Our recommendation in the staff report is for the item to be continued to next month so we can continue to monitor that issue and see if any additional recommendations should be made to modify their conditions of operation.
Would you all like to hear from Code before, Michael? Okay, let's do that.
Good morning, everybody. Manny Villar with Code Compliance Department. And as Alejandro stated, there was a noise violation issued on January 20th, 2023. Along with that, a companion conditional use permit violation that goes along for violating the conditional use permit was issued on that same day. And as Alejandro mentioned, the music could be heard from 635 Euclid Avenue. And we did meet with the complainant. We followed through. Then we went to the property, issued the violations, met with their management, their staff, went over everything. Obviously, they're well aware of the noise issues and... That's how we proceeded. And
how did their staff respond or react?
Oh, they were receptive. I mean, they were respectful and polite. They accepted the violation. They did make some adjustments right after our visit there.
Code verified that the complaint was valid. The code, when they got there, verified the complaint was valid. They observed it themselves.
We verified the complaint was valid, obviously, from our vantage point, from the surrounding properties, the neighborhood. 635 Euclid, and then we went and issued the violation. Obviously, they're at a different vantage point, so they didn't hear it from the location where we gauged the music from, but the complaint was valid and the violations were issued.
Okay. Can I ask, was it was from inside the apartment building? I think that's what somebody said.
Let me review the notes here real quick. Yes, we actually went into one of the units in the 635 Euclid Avenue building, and the gentleman took us to a room that's his personal office space, and the officer could clearly hear the noise from that vantage point.
So, you know, I was looking. This is the 16th time in total that Good Time Hotel has been on our agenda. The 8th time in the past 12 months. So I've been on the board for 12 months, and I've seen you guys 8 times. And I think we got to nip this. We either have to remove their ability to have entertainment on the roof, or...
Yeah, hold on. You know, your comments are welcome, but I think we should let Michael present, because you're making your conclusions. Just let him present, and then I think that would be the right time to give your thoughts.
Can I ask? So the violation was based on the sound for the CUP. The CUP violation was based on the sound in the unit, to clarify?
Yes, sir. That's a companion violation that goes along whenever a property with a conditional use permit receives a noise violation. It's a companion violation that goes along with that. So they're companion violations.
Okay. One of the conditions in their CUP is to have, when the sound exceeds ambient levels, they need to have somebody on the west side of Washington monitoring the sound. Do you guys check for that, or is that?
That would be something we could check for here. Let me review the notes because they're quite extensive.
And while you're looking at that, Rogelio, the staff analysis conclusion was that preceded the violation?
Correct. We released the staff report last week, and this happened on, I believe, on Friday.
Okay, and does staff have a differing conclusion, or?
We haven't
happened in light of all the measures they took.
Yeah, we are surprised that happened. We may have a different recommendation next month. We would like to analyze this a little more. I just was made aware of it this morning.
Yeah, so you want to keep it on the calendar?
Yes.
Right. And Gail, I want you to keep your comments. I just want it was more for a discussion among us after the presentation. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just want to. Okay.
Okay. According to the officer's notes, they when they went to the Good Time Hotel that they were meeting with their staff there was a sound technician on site. I'm not aware if they had a sound technician roving the neighborhood or checking from the other vantage point. That could be something we certainly look into next time, but obviously when our officers are in the field, you know, it's hard. How can we identify who's, you know, in the neighborhood checking their sound? So that's very difficult to, but there was a sound technician on site at the property. Perfect. In the building.
Right. Yeah, no, and I'm not faulting you guys for that. Maybe for to have your officers know that that's a condition, and maybe just when you're approaching the property owner, you know, ask them, you know, who's your person?
Correct.
You know, thank you.
I'll note that, sir.
Any other questions for him?
Yes. Okay. The two complaints that were filed but didn't end up in written violations, why were they not?
The two previous complaints?
Yeah.
So at the end of... Okay, the complaint received on December 21st, 2022, ending in 25210. The officer determined that there was no complaint that we can meet with. When we called the individual back, they did not answer the phone. And when we did our inspection, there was no noise heard from the Good Time Hotel. So there was no noise on the first one that we responded to on the 21st. And the second one, December 31st, 2022, noise complaint ending in 25277.
And do you know what time of the day those complaints were in December?
Yes, ma'am. The one on the 21st, it was called in about 8:15 p.m. We arrived at 8:30, and our officer was on site in the area until 8:50 p.m. So 8:30 in the evening we arrived. The complaint on December 31st, 2022, ending in 25277. We met with the individual at a surrounding property unit, that the complainant, but when the officer arrived at 5:27 p.m., there was no music or no noise heard at all by the officer and the complainant. They were with the complainant, and they acknowledged that they discussed it, and the complainant acknowledged that there was no noise at that time. There was no music being played during our inspection.
But there had been enough noise for the complainant to call it in the first place.
They called in a complaint.
Got it.
Is it possible, sir, from the code compliance, that when somebody calls in a complaint, somehow the hotel's tipped off that code compliance is on the way, or they see your car driving by and then they lower the music? I know that's the case at other venues, but do you think that could be what's happening here?
Well, anything is possible. I don't think it's likely that somebody's tipping them off, but the second point you raise of somebody, employees or whatever, acting as spotters, or if they observe us driving in the neighborhood or parking in front of the property or near the property, that they would alert their staff. That has occurred before and does occur. I don't know in this particular situation. You're welcome.
Thanks so much. Are you going to stay for a minute?
I can stay, sure.
Yeah, just let us hear the presentation.
I will stay. Thank you. Yes, can I ask one quick question?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. Go ahead.
Real quick. The unit where the complaint was observed, was it a ground floor unit, a rooftop unit? Do you know?
We did go to the rooftop. That particular inspection where the noise complaint was valid and there was a violation issued, we went and gauged it from inside of the individual's unit, and then they took us to the rooftop, and it was heard from the rooftop as well of their building.
And you were certain that the sound was coming from Good Time Hotel? We've heard them state a number of times that there's like a variety of sounds in the neighborhood.
I would say the officer was certain that the noise was coming from there.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to let them present, and just want to have you pay attention to their comments so that we may get your thoughts after that. Michael?
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Board of Staff. Michael Larkin, Turner South Biscayne Boulevard, here with the Good Time Hotel. My team is here in combination in person and in Zoom. We have Avi Yesowicz, a general manager, who is here. Dave Koch, Criterion Acoustics, our sound expert, is here via Zoom. And my partner, Matt Amster, who would be here, but he has COVID, he is here via Zoom as well. So it's been 2 months since we've been here in November. At that time, we had completed the installation of the sound wall. It had been satisfactorily tested, thoroughly vetted by the city's consultant and staff. Then the true test of operating and establishing within the established maximum sound level began. It was high season, and the Good Time Hotel continued to operate responsibly. They are incredibly vigilant. They have employees both on the pool deck and in the surrounding neighborhood, always listening to the sound to make sure that they're operating within these established levels. We know that's critically important to operate in a long term here on the beach, and it's worked. There were two unsubstantiated noise complaints, one on December 21st and one on December 31st. Neither resulted in a warning or even a violation. So 2 months of no violations occurred until last Friday. And bear in mind that we had no violations on this property for 1.5 years until this past Friday, right before our hearing. This concerns us. We think it's awfully suspicious that on the Friday before the Tuesday hearing, we get a violation. It is curious because on Friday evening, there was no event taking place. There was no DJ. It was the music being played through the speakers, and that's it. The very next night, on Saturday night, there was an event, but no violation issued on Saturday night. And bear in mind that there was no violation issued for excessive noise. There was a warning, and then there's a violation of the CUP. So there were not two violations issued. There was a warning issued, and then there's a violation issued with regard to the CUP. The actual warning and the violation are somewhat inconsistent. When the inspectors were there in the pool deck, they told Avi that it was a hotel guest staying on Euclid Avenue that called in the complaint. But the actual violation for the CUP says that it was heard from the western balconies of the Arcadia House, which used to be a standard that you all observed before you changed it in October of last year to say that the noise cannot be plainly audible anywhere west of Washington Avenue. So that's an additional concern we have, that code enforcement is operating under an older standard. What we're looking for today is a continuance. We want the time to research the identity of the complainant, to figure out all the backup the city has with regard to this violation, because it doesn't make sense to us. We feel that there are other sources of noise that were occurring around that same time frame. We have appealed the noise violation. We just think it's tremendously unfair, tremendously suspicious that it occurred just a few days before our scheduled progress report. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Avi.
Michael, let me ask you, clarify something. Who did you, you said that you thought the complaint was coming from somewhere and then it was somewhere. Who did you think was the original complainant?
So from this past Friday night, what we were told by the inspector that was there, the complainant was a guest staying in a hotel on Euclid Avenue.
But don't complainants calling code have to identify themselves today? I thought that was a new rule, no?
Through a public records request, yes.
Only through public
I think if you're doing it anonymously, like through the city app, like there's trash in front of so-and-so's house, then you have to definitely have to identify yourself then.
If someone calls code for noise of a venue, don't they have to identify who they are?
I would ask Manny, are you aware if they're required to identify themselves or if they're allowed to
submit a complaint anonymously? I want to reconcile Mr. Larkin's comments that the complainant was different from whom the violation was issued. So maybe you can shed some light on that.
Yes, they are required to identify themselves when reporting a code complaint.
Okay. So any knowledge of what he's talking about, that the code officer told them it was one person, but in fact it was somebody else?
No, I can't really debate or discuss that because, again, I wasn't personally there. If we want to get into that level of it, we'd have to bring the code officer and, I'm just
only
representing
because
the department.
The reason I'm asking is I am aware, very well aware, because I was involved in an incident where there are people that call code for competitive reasons, for malintent reasons. And then, like Gail said, there may be people that have legit concerns and there's a tip-off to the venue. So it goes both ways, and I get that. But this is obviously a very important issue to the hotel to be able to survive and do well, and yet we want to make sure residents aren't disrupted. And so it's a tough issue for us because we want the business to succeed and we want the residents to be able to sleep. So I think it's important. I mean, Michael's as an attorney is speaking basically under oath that he was told it was a different complainant than it turned out to be on your record. So that's concerning to me, and I would just like to figure out how that happens. Or, if you spoke to the code officer who told them it was someone from a hotel versus someone. Now, at the end of the day, your code went to the apartment building and could hear it, apparently. So, it may be moot, but just how we got there, I think, is important. Because I think the reason that the commission passed an ordinance that, or whatever the rule is, that makes people identify themselves was to try to prevent fraudulent complaints. And it sounds like here there's
a little
issue.
Rule.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's why we want the continuance. We want to sort through the facts to figure out, because it's incredibly harmful to the Good Time Hotel. So before you all will take any action, give us the opportunity to sit down with code, with a director of code compliance, to identify the complainant. And we would reach out to them in a respectful way and see what we could do to resolve any issues. But we want to make sure that the person is real. And not just what you were saying for competitive reasons. We want to research that. There are things that don't add up here because we weren't having any type of event whatsoever on Friday night that would have led to this violation.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, just for the record, under state law, a complainant to code compliance is required to identify themselves.
That's what I thought. Okay. I didn't know if it was a state or city. Anything else from your side?
Just want Avi to offer a few remarks.
Okay.
Yeah. Good evening. Listen,
for the record, identify yourself and your position.
My name is Avi Yesowich, and I'm the general manager of the Good Time Hotel. Every person here knows how diligent we've been on making sure that we have no noise complaints. Friday night, we had nothing going on. It's not fair to us, after all we've done to make sure that we abide by our community commitments, to be held responsible for a fake noise complaint. And I, you know what? I'm not saying anything about what you're doing. I respect your profession. We have not done anything wrong. I want to be clear about that. I've spoke to every single member of the community for the past several weeks, Chris Renaga, everybody, about our diligence to doing nothing but being respectful for the community. I don't accept this violation, sir.
I spoke to Chris Renaga, and she's saying the complete opposite of what you're saying, but I hope she comes on and speaks for herself.
Chris Renaga on any, to be very, very clear, we are the most committed to respecting the community and doing what we need to do for this community. So, Chris, please come on.
You know, and I'm going to tell you, I know how the efforts you've gone through. That's why it's puzzling and surprising and disappointing that this came up, but it is what it is. But
Friday, there was no violation. I want to be clear. Friday was no violation, to be crystal clear.
Saturday, so you're calling we had code a massive party. So you're calling code compliance officer a liar?
I'm sorry?
You're calling the code compliance officer a liar?
I'm saying that Friday was no violation. That's what I'm saying.
Can I add, hold on 1 second. I'll be, that's all right. I'm over here.
People ask questions.
I'm over here.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. Nick, or Jonathan, sorry.
Other side. So, couple questions. One, do you have, like, surveillance? I imagine you have cameras all over the property. Do you have cameras from Friday night that show that there was nothing going on and no music or anything like that?
Jonathan, to be honest with you, if I thought there was a reason to have cameras on that day, I would do it. But there's no reason because there is no noise violation.
Well, no, wait. On your pool deck, surely you have cameras.
Of course we have cameras, yeah. And we were happy to share them with you, by the way.
Okay.
But yeah, we know that we did not do anything wrong on Friday night.
Right. And then you'd have no problem showing us the cameras from that night to show that.
1,000,000%.
Great. Then the second question I have, and I guess I imagine I see where this is going in terms of pushing this to the next board meeting. Tell me about the employees, because one of the conditions is when you have music above ambient level to have employees roaming to make sure the sound, there's no sound audible from the west side of Washington Avenue. Are you doing that?
1,000,000%.
Okay. So maybe, you know, and kind of what Gail was bringing up earlier is that, you know, when a code gets called, the music suddenly turns off. I don't see any issue with that because truthfully, I mean, it's possible that the music does perhaps go past West Avenue, and that's the point of having your, I'll call them rovers, is because if it does get loud enough, they're there to turn it off. Whether they see a code compliance officer or not, they're there to flag the issue. It gets shut off. That's the whole purpose of it, right? Turning down the music. And so I guess what I'm saying, you know, our goal is not to punish you with a violation and nail you, catch you in the act. The goal is just to keep the music down, right? And so completely I think agree. And so maybe would be helpful for next meeting, since I, you know, presumably, I mean, this is a serious issue, you know, maybe having one of the rovers with you, one of the employees, to discuss, you know what they're doing and some of the things that they see on day in, day out, you know, when you do have it, have, you know, their experiences. Maybe they've seen things in the neighborhood, music coming from other places. Maybe they can tell us about it next board meeting.
So I want to be crystal clear that our commitment to the community is to have zero noise penetration. If we can't do that, then we need to find a objective, measurable standard about what is acceptable to the community to be able to continue to operate this hotel the way that we want to.
We found that. This is what we're at now, right? We're at that acceptable.
Right here. I agree with you.
It may not be acceptable for you. That's what it's acceptable for the planning board and
what's acceptable to the community is acceptable for me, sir. Just to be clear.
Glad to hear that. But so what I'm saying is we need to figure out a way to assess the situation, right? Nobody. I personally, I want you guys to succeed. I know there are others on this board that do as well. But clearly there's a problem. So I want to kind of explore bit by bit, and we can do it at the next meeting. You know, what's the deal with the, you know, if you do have rovers going around on West Avenue to monitor the sound, there shouldn't be a noise complaint unless there's some nefarious or vindictive reason for a noise complaint. So that's all I'm saying.
So, Mr. Vin, may I address that? So our ability to monitor sound is not necessarily based on the ground level sound monitoring that we have going on right now. As we know, there is a level of sound penetration more or less above ground, above the sound wall that we built, by the way, $1.4 million investment, just so we're clear.
That's my question.
We don't have the ability to be able to measure that sound without the buy-in and acceptance of the community. We want to do that. We need to do that. And we want their support to be able to do that. So,
okay. Yep.
I hope that's crystal clear.
Yeah, stay there a minute. Kareem, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, so I think I'm going to focus on 10AX,
please.
Right, of the conditional use permit, and that gets to this ambient level, right? So it's everything you said about ground level, aerial level, heard all of that. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the way the conditional use permit is written, before we get to ceasing any monitoring of this particular issue for the site, we have 100%. Two options there, right, in that section. So one of the things is ambient music all the time, right? So when you produce these tapes for Friday, you know, it has to reflect the perception, because we can't necessarily be there. Again, we're watching a tape that it was ambient music playing, right, because you didn't have a need to have a rover in the neighborhood. What triggers the rover is you're playing music above ambient level at the pool deck, right?
Absolutely.
Which you have the right to do, which you build all this wall for and all of that, and then you have somebody roving the neighborhood. So, you know, I may not be here next time you come here, but to me that sticks out to my mind. Are you playing ambient music when you're not having these events? And, you know, is that going to be something that you operate by all the time, when you're not having an event? And then I think that could help quite a bit. But, you know, that triggers the person, John, going down to the, you know, across West Avenue and, you know, Washington Avenue, I'm sorry, and then, you know, trying to monitor this. So it just strikes me, just, and I'm not saying you did anything wrong, right, or indifferent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying you have a conditional use permit that has some very stickler kind of conditions, and just make sure not just only you, but staff who you're assigning responsibility to understands it very clearly, so when they engage with code officers, and we had this conversation before on this planning board as well, when we talked about putting QR codes and things like that, which I thought was a good idea by the past board member here who's now a commissioner, because these things are very wordy. And when the code enforcement officer comes out, you know, they're trying to, maybe to your point, Michael, enforce based on their colloquial knowledge of code enforcement, and there may be particular things in here that you have to adhere to, and you should have your staff very knowledgeable about it so that you can have the proper dialogue, not just with the residents, but with code enforcement. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, it looks like you're going to have to come back next month. I'm thinking. We'll see what the board says. But
certainly seems that way.
Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Tanya?
I have a couple of questions. You said you guys didn't have an event on Friday, that it must be coming from someplace else. Are there any neighboring venues that you know of that were emitting noise that night?
You know what, to be honest with you, Tanya, I don't want it to incriminate somebody else that I'm not sure about their level of noise, but I know for a fact that we had zero party going on Friday.
Okay.
Zero.
The other question is, part of the CUP is to have the sound system under lock and key at
yes.
a fixed level, and that there are only a handful of people who can make that change and or change the volume, and that it there shouldn't be a need for it because it's set at the prescribed level, and that's the end of the discussion.
So, it's fully set under my control, and you're absolutely right. There's nobody that has any control over the sound system besides myself at the property, 100%.
So when code compliance came out, what happened with the level of music? Was it turned down after that visit from code, this most recent one?
Again, I don't want to speak on behalf of code compliance because I'm not sure what they heard or sounded like from their perspective, but I know that we had zero party happening at the hotel.
Apparently they came to talk to you, right?
I understand that. Yeah. The issue is that there was music heard in an apartment across the street, and that's the basis. Whether or not it's accurate, that is the 100%. Basis for the code officer coming to the venue. And at the venue, a warning was issued and a violation of CUP was issued. So were there any steps taken at that time to lower the volume of music, whether or not you, your staff, your team felt it was justified, or did you keep the music at the same level that it was when the code officer walked in?
You know, I don't want to misspeak for code. I mean, code could probably speak better than I can about if we lowered their volume.
Let me ask.
But if it's something under lock and key, you should know if the volume was lowered after by your staff after code came in.
I know that it was not at all at the volume for a violation.
But that's a different question.
She's asking if you turned the music down or left it wherever it was when
the property team turned the music down. I wasn't there, but I know that, again,
But your team did turn it down.
100%.
Okay, so somebody besides you has access to it. And after the code visit, the music was turned down, whether or not they agreed with the reason for the code visit.
The property team has the ability to turn down the music regardless of the levels that's set that would not penetrate the community, just to be clear.
But it was turned down by
100%.
Somebody on the... Okay, all right, that's what I was trying to get to.
Thank you.
So, staff, I just have the tough time that I'm having reconciling is in your staff analysis, which, again, predated this violation, you state that the sound consultant took sound measures, they went out there, they were subsequently, after the your consultant agreed with the level of sound, that they locked in place the sound levels, and that's it. And the sound wall was put up, everything they promised they did. So any idea how you reconcile that somehow with all this in place that it's, violation?
It seems difficult, but I suppose the sound levels could be adjusted. Different ambient conditions, wind, the weather, different things change the way noise travels.
But is it correct that they were locked after your sound consultant determined that was reasonable?
They locked it. They set a maximum volume, so... Okay. Anyone on the property has the ability to lower the volume, but they cannot raise it beyond the point set when we were there. Now I can't say that.
Okay, and Avi,
it's unlikely, but they could potentially raise it after we left.
Right, but Avi, under oath,
we would not raise it.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
You're under oath, and you're saying that no one's
100%,
raised.
100%, sir. 100%.
Okay. All right. Anything else from you all before we go to the public?
No, you all given us good suggestions on how to prepare for the February hearing, so we're going to do that.
We do have some hands raised, if you want to open
up. I just want to make sure Michael was finished. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first hand raised is Johan Moore.
Johan, do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
I want to start by reading the FPNA position. FPNA has actively, consistently, and forcefully supported the property right of our residents to the peaceful enjoyment of their properties. FPNA urgently requests the Planning Board to eliminate the provision 10A3 of the conditional use permit granted to 601-685 Washington Avenue, which allows entertainment and a DJ from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the two rooftop venues as soon as possible. FPNA supports the condition for Good Times conditional use permit proposed by staff at the September 2022 meeting. the sound from the applicant's sound system shall not be audible within any area to the west of Washington Avenue at any time. Now, as a personal comment, members of the public find the requirement to submit their names for a complaint to be intimidating, and I have, in fact, in the past offered to sign complaints in order to remove that possibility. Certainly, the comments by the attorney of intending to track down the complainant came across to me as a member of the neighborhood as borderline intimidation. I also, speaking personally, want to push back on the entitled whiny profiteering circular logic presented by the hotel, which has reframed the discussion such so that it is the community's responsibility to constantly be on the alert and to have to involve our city staff to then prove this issue. I personally am supportive of what the member Gail Durham seems to be suggesting, which is that this issue needs to be addressed soon and that the COP needs to be revoked. I think that the burden needs to be on the establishment to cease any possibility of impingement on the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next. We have Mitch Novick.
Good morning, Mitch. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. Good morning, and congratulations to Mr. Elias and Ms. Bott. I would urge board members to request body cam footage from the code officer who issued the violation. I believe protocol requires the officer to go to both the complainant's location and the source of the noise, and I imagine that would provide you with a lot of information as to what occurred last Friday. As I've been saying, noise attracts noise. It should be contained to the property lines. And back to the body cam footage, I recently had an issue from a seven-story hotel on Washington, the other one, which had a band and was blasting their music. I heard it in my living room, my kitchen, my bedroom. Code officer came, requested the body cam footage, and it's indisputable. The impact noise from these types of establishments have on the quality of life of residents in the community. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitch. Anybody else?
We have the next person. There's no name. It just says Zoom user.
Zoom user, can you state your name?
Chris Renaga.
Hi, Chris. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Firstly, I would just like to say that during the entire sound check process, I welcome both the City of Miami Beach and Good Time Hotel to come to my residence at 730 Pennsylvania Avenue, apartment 702. I am on the seventh floor and am adjacent to the Good Time Hotel. And it's been, I mean, I believe what the code enforcement that was here at the time said, that audible is audible. So there was an incident on Saturday where I reached out to Avi because we've been in close contact. Me as a community member, I'm trying to be fair to both sides, obviously to myself as well in my community. And, you know, there was noise. I got home from work, 5 o'clock. I opened my balcony. I'm trying to have a nice leisurely afternoon like everyone else deserves. And I texted Avi. I said, is this the sound that it's measured? Is this what it's supposed to be set at? And I said, you're welcome to come over and see here for yourself. And he did, fortunately. And he agreed that it's loud. And I don't know what else to say, how to work around it. I mean, I've tried my hardest to be fair to myself, like I said, to our community and to the hotel. So I don't know what the resolution is, but it is very audible. We went back to the hotel. We walked past the rover. It's quiet on the street. You don't hear the music like you do from the seventh floor and above or above the hotel. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all we have.
Okay. Michael, you want to respond to any of the public comment?
To the whiny profiteering circular logic comment? No, I'm good. I think that Mitch's comments are fine. Johann Marr is a bit inflammatory. Chris, we're going to do our best to keep on reaching out to her and figure out what's wrong there. I think she had the most reasonable comments, and we're going to keep on meeting with her and addressing her comments.
So, can I say,
Avi, can you respond? Is that, did that happen? She called and you agreed that it was too loud?
Yes. Yeah, so,
go ahead.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Just go back a little bit.
So Chris's complaint is a reasonable complaint. Our entire point is that we do not want at all to have any noise penetration in the community. And we're going to work towards that goal.
Can I ask a quick follow-up?
Sure.
Yeah. Is it possible, guys, that the sound calibration eliminated sound at the street level, but it's still hitting the upper floors of the neighbors' buildings?
Something we have to look at for sure next month.
Staff was present for the test.
I mean,
did you observe it?
Yes, we did go to Chris Reynaga's apartment, so it's pretty high up. I want to say she was on the sixth or seventh floor of a building. We adjusted the volume to points where we could hear it and then lowered it to points where we could no longer hear it and set it at the point where it could no longer be heard. But that was a specific day with specific weather conditions.
So just so I'm crystal clear, Chris and I had a very honest discussion, and she's on the call. My goal to her was we don't want any penetration or any disturbance to her community. Now, we haven't gotten there yet, obviously, but we will get there. We've made incredible improvements. Incredible improvements.
Just say quickly, it is true that wind will affect sound. So if there is, you know,
100%.
There's a prevailing wind on that day and it wasn't tested with wind conditions, it's going to happen. So I think somehow it needs to be recalibrated for that.
Yeah, I was just going to raise the same issue. And, you know, we can go back and see what the conditions were that the sound engineers planned for. If there must be some kind of formula that, you know, on a windy day with X number of knots of wind, sound travels, you know, whatever. So I would suggest that gets looked into if it was put into the report, the findings, and maybe the volume setting has been for a non-windy day, but maybe it needs to be calibrated based on the weather conditions, which, you know, is a bit of more of a burden on you guys. But at the same time, it's a burden on the people who are trying to make this business work the way they want it to. I also think, I forget who mentioned it, but the body cam footage should be pulled in addition to the other things that have been discussed as a review so that everyone can see what was experienced by the code compliance officer at the complainant's location and once he or she arrived at the venue. So this is, you know, no one's trying to, this isn't a game of gotcha. We're trying to understand. We know you've worked hard. I think most in the community would agree that if the sound can be contained successfully, regardless of the windy conditions, regardless of anyone else doing anything else in the neighborhood, then that is a win for everyone. So we need to figure out how to get there. And if there is a problem, then we need to figure out the solution to the problem.
And I just want to say, no one's questioning your sincerity, okay? I feel it, I see it, and I know how hard you're working. So I don't want you to get misunderstood that we're challenging your veracity or your honesty.
It means a lot to me.
Thank you. And obviously it's a situation where, like I said earlier, to me it's all about balance. I want you all to succeed. I want you to have fun parties. I want people to enjoy your venue. I also need the neighbors to have peace and quiet. So it's
100%
a balance. So, Gail, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Cream, and then Gail.
Yeah, just I was going to underscore, and I won't speak long, your point and Tanya's point. And I think, yes, you have a responsibility. It's a great responsibility in order for you to continue operating in the city of Miami Beach, and I think you should take that on. I just, you know, just echoing some of what I thought I heard is there's a difference between an operator who's trying to solve a problem versus an operator who is allowing a problem or being a problem. So I recognize that you are trying to solve a problem. So I know everybody's, you know, ready to get the torch. Well, I shouldn't say everybody. Some people are ready to get the torches and, you know, burn the thing down. But I disagree with that, Mr. Chairman. And the rest of my board members, I think that, you know, we've made a significant investment here. You've made a significant investment. And I think we can get it calibrated for various scenarios. And I think there is a harmonious place for both the residents to land and you as an operator. So keep at it. But to Gail's point, you know, let's not let the, you know, we don't want this to be a 24-month thing. You know, let's get it nipped in the butt.
Can I just ask? I
think Gail.
I already asked her permission.
Oh, sorry.
Rogelio, can you send around the body cam footage before the meeting?
By the way, you don't have to get up, but does Code, they have body cam footage every time they go to a complaint?
It's unusual.
They do. Okay.
I'm not familiar with how that works. I will reach out to code enforcement and see what can be done in that. Just so we can like look at it at the computer at home before we come to the meeting, so we don't have to watch it in the meeting. Yeah. I'll reach out to them. I'm not sure exactly the technology and how that functions or if you know.
Well, Mitch got the body cam footage, so I'm sure we can too.
Can I make a public records request for body cam footage? That'd be a first.
Avi,
you can, yes.
Yeah.
Your hotel's financial health and well-being and business model depend on a rooftop, like, nightclub atmosphere? If that's true, I find that concerning. I think a hotel's success should be based on the hotel rooms and maybe the indoor restaurant. I was going to ask also code compliance, you know, do they have a copy of the conditional use permit? I even have trouble finding it. So I don't even know if they know, like, the rules and all these hours of operation. So we all say we want to get to, you know, a solution, and I have the solution. The solution is no more entertainment on outdoor areas. That's the final solution. You talk about your investment. Well, these middle-class people that live across the street, you know, they have their investments, too, in their properties. At the very least, I think, if you guys agree, you know, limit the outdoor entertainment to 5 o'clock, so at least when people come home from work, you know, they can kick back and they can be guaranteed not to have outdoor entertainment. Right now, you're allowed to have it till 8 p.m. So that would be, I don't know, my motion concerning the outdoor entertainment. Either remove outdoor entertainment as a right that we gave you in a cup, or at least to reduce it to 5 p.m. Right now, it's till 8 p.m. And besides that, there's two other things in this cup that I don't know if it was a typo or a problem. But a problem, two problems in this cup. Can I mention them now?
Sure.
Okay. On condition number one, we've gone over this before. Their original cup said no restaurants or personal services on the ground floor. And we never changed that. And we decided that we were going to discuss it because they want to have a restaurant on the ground floor. And if they do have a restaurant on the ground floor, if we allow it, I suggest that we have some restrictions, like no outdoor speakers at these restaurants and no special events permits. Unfortunately, the cup automatically put restaurants are allowed on the first floor when we never, ever voted on that. So that's one problem. So maybe we can do that today. The second item, so that was condition number one. Condition number 10A11 has been completely struck out. And I thought we only struck out vibrations to be used to not be included in violations. Okay, it's 10A11. The entire item has been striked out. I think we didn't mean to strike out audio because we struck it out. So now it says basically people can hear the hotel music inside their apartment and there's no violation. That's what it says, but that's not what we meant.
Their apartments are located west of Washington Avenue, right. So
So the same rule, even if without that condition, that is the case.
We did that, Gail, because of the – we broadened it. We made it wet, anything west of Washington.
So, which is why code, when they go to an apartment, they shouldn't have to hear it in on the interior. They can be standing on the balcony, and if they hear it, it's west of Washington Avenue.
That was us strengthening
it. Okay, so – okay.
We strengthened it.
Okay, but when we strengthen it, does it say inside? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, I understand. Okay, so what about the restaurants on the ground floor? Are we going to opine on that and vote on that today?
It was already voted on, though.
It was. I watched the videotapes over and over. I already discussed this with Rogelio. We never voted on it. After the meeting, he said, "Gail, look at the tape." I went home. I looked at the tape. We didn't vote on it. But all of a sudden, it appears as if we did vote on it.
So I'm opening up the in the November meeting, we presented a draft staff report that was what was voted on, and the draft staff report included the language. The draft CUP included the language allowing the restaurants.
If the motion accepted staff's recommendations, then you modified the CUP because that was a part of staff's recommendations.
And my notes also say that the motion included striking that condition 11.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah. We clearly did that.
Okay, so if I'm mistaken.
Sorry, in the October meeting that was done.
Well, in the October meeting, I have in my notes that we said we would vote on the ground floor at a later date. So obviously now you're saying your notes are different than Nick's notes that are different than my notes. And we didn't put any restrictions like no outdoor speakers on the ground floor restaurants. I think
we're voting on the specifics for the restaurant at a later date. We just opened it up to allow them to start exploring putting in a tenant there because they're unable to fill it.
Well, either we voted to allow restaurants on the ground floor or we didn't, or we voted to not allow it, or we didn't vote on it at all.
We voted to allow the concept of a restaurant, but we didn't vote to allow particular opening times or closing times of that restaurant.
Well, we would have done that at that time.
Well, no, because there's no tenant.
Wait for the applicant.
They have to have their tenant sign,
right?
Construction, permitting, and all that stuff.
Okay, so this is what we'll do. I will go back now and look at the November video. I had looked at the September and October. And I will see if we voted on that. And if we didn't, then we will come back and fix that.
Do you have any other questions of the applicant?
No, I don't have questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just move that we continue this until the next planning board meeting, which would be, I'm sorry, I don't remember the date.
February 28th.
February 28th.
February 28th.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion by Mr. Brantley, second by Mr. Frieden.
Where's Nick?
He's in the restaurant.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. You want to just give Nick a second?
Yep.
Okay. We're going to vote. Sorry. I want to be back.
We have a motion to continue to the February 28th meeting. So roll call, Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Brantley?
Yes.
Mr. Cement is absent. Ms. Durham? Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Jalpi?
Yes.
Motion passes.
And can I just say, Mr. Chair, to the members of the public who are listening, just thank you for attending, and it's really helpful for us to get a perspective of what's going on from your perspective. We have the applicant here, or the property owner here and manager here, so thank you to the members of the public for attending.
If I may, I promise that we are committed to the incredible understanding of noise not penetrating the community.
Right. Yeah, we just need to figure out what happened here. It seems aberrational. It really does. But, you know, you went a year and a half without a problem, and all of a sudden. So, you know, try to get to the bottom. I know you have very able counsel who will help you. And
he's a very handsome counsel also. But on top of that, we are committed to making sure the community has a peaceful,
astounding
silence.
That's what we need. All right. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. A funny story. I got back from Thailand on January 7th, and we had our law firm photo shoot on January 9th, and I had eaten so much in Thailand, I gained like 10 pounds, and my head was like a basket. It was the worst possible time to have the law firm photo shoot, but so I wasn't looking too handsome on January 9th.
You look great, sir.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, guys. See you next month. Okay, there are no previously continued items, so we're going to new applications. Planning Board File 220551 on page 11 of your books. You know, and I had asked staff so many times, is there a way to get the name of the venue on our agendas? It would
really
be helpful.
In this case, it's not a venue. It's an entire building. So okay. We really don't have a name of a venue to share with you.
Okay.
On the next item, we also didn't have these are both the two items that are coming before you are
change
name changes.
Owner. Right. And well, the second one's Bayoli,
one,
right?
The second one was Bayoli, but it's going to be something else. So that's okay. Why we didn't include the name Bayoli.
Okay.
And I don't believe they have the name registered. So but we do try to do that. We do look for names when we have them and include them.
Okay. Do you have any intro on this one?
Just a brief intro. This is a request for a modification to a previously modified conditional use permit. The applicants are requesting to change the name of the owner and operator. The owner is currently MCGA Collins Realty LLC. The new name will be Regal 2000 Collins Retail Holdings LLC, RDS Bulan LLC, 237 Parking LLC, and 237 20th Street Garage LLC. So as part of this, the condition 11 would be amended to list the new names. We're also recommending that the planning board include a condition that in the future, if the ownership is modified, that they provide the city with an affidavit and then schedule a progress report subsequent to the city accepting the affidavit. We also recommend including a condition that the applicant agrees to provide access to areas subject to the CUP. So that doesn't include private residences, but it does include any of the public venues that are subject to the CUP requirements. And then also we found a Scrivener's error in the previously approved order. Some of the conditions had been renumbered and other conditions had citations to conditions that became incorrect once those were renumbered. So the draft order that's before you has all of the numbers corrected. And so with that, staff recommends that the planning board approve the modification subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
What is there? What is the operation of what? What is it?
So there's multiple venues that all have sub CUPs, and actually you'll likely be getting one very soon for one of the sub CUPs that's requesting some modifications. So this has Sweet Liberty. It has some other venues.
So it's a building that Sweet Liberty is at the bottom floor.
Correct.
Got it. I
correct.
Just wanted
it's
to
a whole
it
complex. It covers about three separate lots that are part of the same unified development site.
Okay, and this is a change of owner of the overall?
Of the master CUP,
got
yes.
It.
Okay. So there are sub-conditional use permits for specific venues. This is the master conditional use permit.
Got it. Okay.
It's a complex one. It was tough for us to get a hold of it.
Right.
And Rahelio just did a great job of describing it, but Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here with my colleague Alejandro Moreno. So I actually have been with this property since like the late 90s. It started as a surface parking lot, the northeast corner of Liberty and 20th Street. And there I was working with Marcus Frankel and the ownership group, and we got just a standalone garage there. Then the same ownership group came into acquisition of the remaining property, which stretched all the way to Collins at 20th, then all the way north to Collins and 21st Street. This is one of the largest mixed-use buildings within Miami Beach. And what the city has always done as a standard practice, when you get a building this large, you have a master CUP. This was obtained here in 2001, and then Rahelio is correct. Individual tenants came in, whether they're entertainment establishments, seeking their own individual CUPs. So here you have a property, you have a master CUP, and then multiple individual CUPs. But we're here today because the master CUP has conditions relating to ownership. So all we're doing is amending these conditions to reflect the most current ownership, and that's it.
And I'm assuming you agree with all of staff's recommended
yes.
Inclusions of the conditions?
Right.
Okay.
Michael, that building or that site is not one contiguous building, right? It's combined or it's
It is one building.
It is one contiguous structure.
It takes up like 75% of the block.
No, I couldn't tell.
It looks like there's a few facades in the front because of one of the facades, I believe, is a contributing facade in the historic district, but they're all basic. When you go in there, they're all interconnected.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, there was the Cheetah Club that's on 21st Street. That facade was retained, but Wolfie's was in a non-contributing building, and then going all the way down to the 5 O'Clock Club, owned by the famous Leroy Griffith, who also owns Club Madonna. So all of that was demolished because every single building in that row was treated as non-contributing.
Anybody from the public want to speak on this?
We have no hands raised.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, do any board members have any ex parte communications?
Any disclosures to make, Gail?
I visited the building, but I didn't speak to anybody.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a name change, so I didn't think there would be any. But any other questions, or someone want to move it?
I'll move it.
Gail, you have questions?
Yes. It says that there's a $5 discount that you have pro-offered for anybody visiting a cultural venue in the immediate area. But I went to the parking garage, and they didn't know anything about this $5 discount that you pro-offered. So I was wondering if maybe you could post a sign stating so at the garage so people know about it. I don't see any residents really living in the area. There's all hotels across the street, so I really don't have a problem with this 5 a.m. entertainment alcohol license.
Yeah, it's just a name, an operator change at this point, though.
But they said, well, let's see.
Yeah, and at $5, I imagine that's orchestrated through the Bass Museum or some of the other shops. When you go in, they validate your ticket, and then when you go to the garage, that's when you receive your benefit.
I went to the library, and there was no signs there telling people that this opportunity was available. That's all.
Yeah, and no, the only point I raised, Gail, it may be also an issue with the actual venues themselves, so the library may need to do it as to get to your point versus them doing it so much. So they can still do it, but it may need to happen at the venue.
Okay, yeah, I know it's tricky. I think the venue should also advertise it. Okay, thank you.
Someone want to move it?
Yep, I did.
We have a motion by Mr. Brantley. We need a second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Frieden. Roll call, Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Brantley?
Yes.
Mr. Cement is absent. Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Jalpi?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Thank you all for your time. And Nick and Kareem, thank you all so much for your service. It's been a long 6 years, I know, but you all have done a great job, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can still call me once a month if you want.
What'd you say? You
can still call me if you want.
Yeah, we can still come in the audience. I mean, we're still, you know, residents of Miami Beach.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Similar item next. Same operator change. Planning Board file PB 220560. It's on page 21 of your books, pertaining to what was Baoli Restaurant.
Okay, so again, application requesting a name change. The current owner is 1906 Collins LLC. The new name will be Trademark Miami Inc. We are also suggesting the same changes, requiring that new ownership changes require the submittal of an affidavit and then the subsequent scheduling of a progress report, and then also adding the condition allowing code enforcement to access the site, the portions of the site subject to the CUP. And with that, staff recommends that the planning board approve the modifications to the CUP subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
I'm sorry, I was reading, Sam. What is Miami Inc.?
Trademark Miami.
Trademark Miami Inc. is the new name.
Trademarked in the name.
Of the venue?
Of the owner.
Of the owner. Miami. Of the owner.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the venue will be called. We didn't receive that information.
Okay.
I'll clear that up.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, honorable board members. James Rao with Greensboro Martyr, offices at 600 Brickell Avenue. Here with me today by Zoom are my associate, Adrian Noto, and our client, Michael Redard. Our client's one of the partners. As the staff mentioned, this is an application for change of operator. The name of the applicant is Trademark Miami, and our client, the applicant, owns the trademark Baioli, which is the existing venue. And so even the name of the venue is not going to change, and neither is the operation at all. Okay. It intends to remain exactly as is. We don't normally get into the trade names when we file an application, but in this unique case, they even are maintaining the exact name of the venue. They're not proposing any changes, and they're approaching the employees so they can maintain continuity and so that people can keep their jobs, and they've got a very positive response and interest from the employees so far. There'll be a short transition period where I'm sure everyone will take some much-deserved time off, and then they plan to continue the operation. They're familiar with the conditions of approval, which I noted were approved over a decade ago, and the venue has become an important part of Miami Beach hospitality, and so we're glad to see them continue on, of course, under the jurisdiction of this board. And so we're asking for your approval for what is essentially a change in the LLC name.
Okay. I'm gonna move that we approve this subject to the additional conditions by staff, which are two standard additions to the CUP.
Okay, I agree. But before anyone have questions, anyone from the public?
We have no hands raised.
Okay.
And are there any disclosures?
None.
No.
None.
I visited the place. I talked to some people that live next door. They didn't see the pink notice. I have to say the pink notice that, you know, residents are supposed to see and, you know, pique their interest was at my ankle length, and you'd have to basically get on your stomach to read it. But they didn't have any complaints about noise.
Okay. Anyone want a sec? Oh, sorry.
Well, I guess the only question I have, have there been any issues with the venue, you know, out of the ordinary? They've been there since 2011, I guess.
We're not aware of any. Code enforcement usually lets us know when there's violations related to a CUP site, and they haven't informed us of any.
Okay.
I looked up the noise complaints. There's four since 2020, but it's just a complaint, no violation.
I guess because what I'm saying is that when we're allowing new owners of a, you know, it's a restaurant, nightclub sort of place, when we're allowing new owners to come in, is there any process, you know, because we do a big inspection and we hear about their plans when we have a new restaurant, a new venue, right? We have new owners coming in, planning to do the same, planning to keep this staff, but do we just rubber stamp it usually, or do we just, you know, is there anything else that we should be doing in terms of due diligence to make sure they continue on this road? I guess they would need to, if they want to change the concept, do they need to come back before us? I mean, yeah.
Yes. If they want to operate differently than what's approved in the CUP, they would need to submit for a modification and identify the changes that they would like to make, and we would make a recommendation as to whether or not we support those changes or not.
Right. I think the short answer is there's nothing we would do proactively if they're not changing anything, but obviously if the new operators are not as good as the old operators, then they'll probably be before us at some point.
Fair enough.
But I mean, to your point, it goes back to, you know, when you also have a CUP over a whole building and then you have tenants and who's noticed. And
right.
We had that issue with MA, I think was the name of that
yes.
deal.
Yep.
So I think it's a good question, but I think Brian answered it.
Yeah, like for instance, Sweet Liberty, I was on the planning board when we approved them, and we made them do a vestibule and all kinds of soundproofing, and there's been no complaints, and they're a really popular bar club. So
I'm just saying, when it comes to new operators of this sort of venue, maybe the planning board should have a bigger role in discussing their plans and having them, you know, discuss it instead of rubber stamping it. But I see what you're saying. There haven't been any issues, and
it's not very
reactive about it.
Well, no, I agree with Jonathan, except I think the entertainment's only indoor. Is that correct?
It is, yeah.
Correct, yeah.
So if it was outdoor, I would ask that they have that sound-controlled volume.
And they have a vestibule so that when you open the door, it doesn't escape at all. So anyway.
Yeah, so all if right. it's not outdoors, then yeah. I think we should
right, so
just leave
so
it.
So someone want a second Kareem's motion?
I'll second.
Okay. Tanya seconded it.
Okay. Roll call, Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Brantley?
Yes.
Mr. Simon is absent. Ms. Trum?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Jalpy?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thanks, James.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay, now we're on to two code amendments. First is number 7 in the agenda, Planning Board File 220565, pertaining to parking district number 6 and restaurant parking amendments.
Okay, so this is an amendment to the chapter 130 of the Land Development Regulations, which relates to off-street parking, specific to parking district number 6, which is the parking district that covers Alton Road. This specific amendment is intended to affect the southern portion of Alton Road, specifically the area located south of 10th Street and north of 5th Street. Currently, parking district number 6 provides that restaurants that have up to 60 seats or 1,500 square feet have no parking requirement. And so there are several successful restaurants in this area. They are operating, they have no parking requirement, and they have 60 seats. However, there are several retail locations in this area that are that have been vacant. They've been sitting vacant. And so in an effort to allow those spaces to be utilized, what this amendment does, it would allow those restaurants that have been in existence I believe since December 1st, 2022, to expand up to 150 seats and not trigger a parking requirement. There are a few restaurants in that area that have expressed an interest in expanding and utilizing that space. However, the parking requirements are such that they would not be able to expand that in any way.
What's the parameter in excess of what requires? So right now, they're not required?
60 seats.
Okay. So if you have 60 seats, you have no parking requirement.
Or 1,500 square feet.
Okay,
correct.
And they want it. And once you go over 60 seats, then it triggers what requirement?
One space per 4 seats.
For the additional seats or for the whole?
I believe it's for the whole restaurant.
They have so if once you go past 60, then you have to count the whole 60 plus. Okay.
And what does it actually trigger, that you have to build a parking garage or that you just have to pay a parking in lieu fee?
You either have to build – either way – you can provide it by providing the parking or paying a fee in lieu of parking. The fee is currently $40,000 a space. Or if you're expanding into an existing area that's already been developed, you can opt to use the annual fee, which is $800 per space per year.
So I heard I have another question. And so if you can't have on-site parking, you can have 1,000 seats, but you just have to pay. It doesn't prevent you from expanding your seats. You just have to pay the parking in lieu fee. And that parking in lieu fee funds what? It funds the trolley? It funds
It goes to the transportation department. The code lists what it can be used for, and it can be used for the city to build new parking garages, for transportation improvements, bike lanes, the trolley, I believe, can some of the money for that can go to the trolley and a slew of other things.
Okay, so that's an important fund that we need to fund.
I will say many people just choose not to forego expansions or not to build things or just provide the parking because the fee, specifically if it's new construction, is prohibitively expensive. The $40,000 per space is
building a new parking garage is probably not an option. I have one more. Can you also, in lieu of the parking fee and building a parking garage, provide valet parking? Is that like another option?
You can provide valet parking, but the spaces for the off-site parking need to be located, I believe, within 500 feet if you're in a historic district.
Yeah.
And the spaces need to be dedicated. Okay. They need to be reserved. So
A lot of people do that. So these are options because guys wrote that it cannot expand. You said the existing parking requirements prevent the restaurant from expanding, and that's not true.
They do prevent. They don't prohibit. No, they prevent. They do. They are expensive options.
You can expand, but you just have to pay.
Oh, correct.
A parking and lieu fee. No, but prevent means, you know, prohibit.
We didn't say prohibit. They can do it, but it does prevent it by making it prohibitively expensive.
Right. Oh, but you didn't say that. Okay.
So, Rogelio, I'm sorry.
Yes.
The current restaurants that are operating with no parking requirements, do they have valet service currently? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I know we have some of them here. We can ask them if they have valet.
All right, only because I want to give credence to a Mr. Goltanoff sent a thoughtful email on this item talking about how, you know, valets can create more traffic in the area, runners, speeders. So
yep.
I'd like to find out about that. So, all right.
Can I ask you a quick question, sure. please? Can you elaborate on that $800 per spot per year option? What is that?
So the fee in lieu of parking section allows, under certain circumstances, if you're not if you're doing a change of use, so if it's a space that's going from retail and going to restaurant, and that triggers a higher parking requirement within an existing building, you can choose for those extra spaces rather than paying the $40,000 per space fee. You can pay, I think it's 2% of $40,000 is $800. So you can choose to pay that on an annual basis per
so
space.
Would the restaurants that fall within this this recommendation be able to take advantage of that?
They could, but it would trigger $800 per space inclusive of the 60 seats that they
right.
currently have.
Understood.
So it would be – so let's see. If a restaurant that has 150 seats – divided by 4 would be 37 spaces. So 37 times.
You're calculating the parking fee in lieu of?
That would be $29,600 a year.
That's the fee in lieu of the spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and let me ask something. Is the fee amount set in stone, or is that planning board jurisdiction that we're, if we wanted to compromise and reduce the fee, or it's either all or nothing?
The fee
is set by ordinance.
Okay.
So it would need to apply uniformly.
So there's no flexibility on that issue.
But it is a fee within the land development regulations, so if you want to make a suggestion that the fee
Right, but I'm just saying yeah. We can make a recommendation in the ordinance, whether we pass it favorably, to think about maybe reducing the fee as opposed to eliminating it.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that fee go to when people pay in lieu of parking?
Just ask the same thing.
So it's in let me open that section. It's in chapter 130.
And the main use for parking impact fees is to construct new parking. So it could be surface lots, it could be built garages.
It says such parking, transportation, mobility related improvement programs may include parking garages and related facilities, transit capital funding, transit okay. improvements, bicycle facilities, intelligent transportation systems, pedestrian improvements, pedestrian facilities.
Got it. So there's good use of funds.
I have
yep.
another question.
Okay. Sure, so, Tanya.
What is the rationale behind taking a restaurant that has existed for a number of years with 60 seats and upon their desire to expand, requiring to retroactively provide parking for the 60 seats that have been operating without that requirement and not causing a problem? Why wouldn't there be an option for a restaurant that's expanding to pay the additional parking, to cover the additional parking needs predicated on the expansion of additional seats?
I suppose it could be drafted that way. It's just the way the language is drafted in the code. It says restaurants. Let me just read it. There shall be no parking requirement for individual establishments of 60 seats or less, or 1,500 square feet or less eating and drinking areas, up to a total aggregate square footage of 5,000 square feet per development site. For individual establishments over 60 seats or 1,500 square feet of eating and or drinking areas, or for development sites with a total aggregate square footage of more than 5,000 square feet of these uses, there shall be one space per 4 seats or one space per 60 square feet of space not used for seating. So that's just the way it's drafted. You can say the space in excess of 60 seats, there shall be one space per 4 seats.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem very nuanced. I mean, maybe if you're building something new and you're creating new space, or you're taking over and changing a space from something that was more moribund to something that's going to be more active, and just going out of the box with 300 seats, that's a different conversation than a neighborhood restaurant that has operated successfully with 60 seats without a parking requirement. They are going to be bigger, so there will be a bigger impact, but those first 60 seats won't be part of the problem. So right. if you charge them for only the additional, whatever it is, 90 seats, wouldn't that be a more sort of...
But based on the fee, it's still high.
That would be
high based on the fee he went through, whether you do the financed version of that at $800 or you do the $40,000 version. It's still
is still high.
It's about $18,000 a year.
But it's still better than it was.
No doubt. And I understood your rationale. And I suspect that the reason that it exists like that in the code is because of timeline, right? It's disjointed. Like, you know, it was written one day, and then, you know, several years later, someone added, you know, language to the code. So it never really coalesced around one single thought, which you've done here today. So, I mean, we can certainly address that. But I just think, you know, it sounds to me like the commissioner, you know, is sponsoring this item because there is less capacity going on in a particular part of town that is trying to gin up or, you know, get more, you know, of this type of business operating in this particular area. And there, so there seems to be a bucket that's half full that we can allow to fill it up a little bit more. Is what
right, which is great for now. But when things start booming again and all of a sudden there are people, there are bidding wars on retail spaces, let's say, you know, hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later. And we now have code that waives parking requirements in this area. That's...
All right. You know what? This is what we normally do after the public finishes. Let's let them speak, and then we can debate this up after.
Thank you to the chair and the board. I really appreciate your time. My name is Jacqueline Parolo, and together with my brother and my sister-in-law, we own Maculina Restaurant located at 820 Alton Road. We are approaching our 11th birthday this year. Super exciting. During the pandemic, the Miami Beach Hostel, which is connected to our building and located behind us, shuttered their doors. Since then, we were able to expand our lease and sign another 10 years, also an exciting feat. We do have plans to expand to that area and take over that pre-existing business that's already built.
You're talking about the outdoor area behind
you? Yeah, the outdoor area and the building where the former rooms were, where the hostel was.
Right, but you've been operating in the back, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's an amazing opportunity for you know, a successful mom-and-pop restaurant to be able to expand at the same location and to be able to grow with your business. You know, not everybody's granted this, you know, 10 years in. We wouldn't have been able to fill these seats 10 years ago, right? So we're super excited at this opportunity. Just to let you know, we are the sole owners. There are no private investors or money behind us. We are self-funding this renovation, close to $2 million renovation at this location, at this building. We're invested in South Beach. This is our home. This is where we live, and we understand, you know, the need for adjustments to the impact that our business will have. But a mobility fee of, you know, to the tune of $18,000 or $36,000 a year would crush a small business like us. And also to the fact of kind of learning about this at this point in our permitting process is very difficult. Obviously, I'm sure you're aware there's increased rent and all of that that comes along with expanding. We've kind of calculated and done all that, and it's just it's difficult for us. We're also located, I think you all know, on the west side of town, which to a lot of the points that were made is a more residential area, a little bit quieter, and we have a lot of clientele that walks to us or uses Uber, and so parking has not been an issue. We do have plans to offer valet once the expansion is complete. Happy to hear your thoughts on that, and I know you mentioned a discussion point on that. And we were told that unfortunately will not fulfill the requirement. So I don't know if we were mis-explained something or if I misunderstood something, but we were told that won't suffice the parking requirement. So we've just had some difficulty trying to figure out the solution, and I, again, thank you for your time and your consideration on it.
Yes.
We can offer...
Go to the mic, if you don't mind.
Sorry.
So, and please introduce. Sorry, just for the record, you have to introduce yourself.
Michael Parolo, owner of Maculina, Jackie's brother.
brother of Dad.
So the way the code is written, in order for the valet parking to satisfy this requirement, these spots have to be designated. So we would have to offer something like 50 spots that are solely ours, 24/7, and when we did the research, contacted the parking lots in our area, that cost actually goes over the $37,000 that is required of us to pay for that. So it's kind of like,
and also the
storing cars is very expensive.
Yeah. And the code is requiring 24 hours a day, 7 days a week just for Maculina. So there's not really many parking garages that are willing to offer
that many spots.
20. And we're not going to be open for lunch. We're dinner only. So even, you know, we thought about contacting Baptist across the street because they're closed at night. But it won't suffice because they're like, we can't give you that many spots 24 hours a day. Right?
And the $37,000 you mentioned, that's the $800 per space annually, something like that.
Yeah.
Why is it 24 hours? It should only be during your operating hours.
That's not how it's done.
Because the required parking, if you to satisfy the parking requirement, they have to be your spaces. Either they're on your property or you have access to them. So I think that's...
Because I know a lot of businesses on West Ave close like at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and then you can use their parking lot. Afterwards, like Bank of America, you know,
it's not a shared parking thing. They want to have like a dedicated. The code was written to have.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, Barton G uses Bank of America parking lot.
You can use someone's. The code has a provision for underutilized parking that. So their spaces, they're not using them during the day. They have the ability to provide a report and have them used for other valet operators as underutilized parking. However, that cannot be required parking for any particular use. That has to be operational parking that is not required by the code.
Okay, so I have a question for the owner. So if there's not going to be... so the 150 seats, is that in addition to the ones that are inside, or is that your total seats? The total seats are going to be 150. And you expect people to get there by Uber or by trolley or by biking. But, you know, that's what the fee in lieu pays for, those options, those different options to transport ourselves to your fine restaurant. I mean, I think you guys are one of the most successful restaurants in Miami Beach. It's always crowded. You have the best food. You're really great. But I figured out, you know, $576 a week for our parking in lieu fund is important. And it's not going to be just you guys. It's going to be anybody. This is not just spot zoning. This goes like five blocks of restaurants. We'll get the same privilege if we approve this, and we'll lose, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars possibly in parking in lieu fee for the trolley and other things. I don't like the way that the commissioner wrote this ordinance. He could have said compromise like maybe up to 100 seats, and then you'd have to pay for 50 seats parking in lieu. I think that's more fair. We're trying to be fair here, not give away the candy store. You know, we have to be fair to the other restaurants that aren't getting this privilege that you want. Maybe you could pay a parking fee that someone parked around the corner, and they come with you with a validated parking, and maybe you can pay for people's parking that's at the nearby garage.
So Gail, do you have any questions? Because what you're doing is discussion among the board once we make a decision.
Yeah, you're right.
Questions of them?
I do have a question.
Yeah, I have one question before they start, because I want to make sure I understand. Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, I want to also tell you I'm a huge fan of your restaurant.
I know. We've met there before.
You guys are fabulous. But I do have a question. I was so happy when you were able to take advantage of that back outdoor area. Is that where the expansion? Because aren't you already serving back there?
So the way the building is behind where the kitchen is,
yeah,
familiar with the space.
Of course.
The size of the kitchen, just multiply that by six. There was six hostel rooms,
right,
which is the wall that when you're sitting outside you see. So all that space.
Oh, so more spaces become available.
Yes.
I see. Because right now, even with the area you were using, it was 60 seats.
How many seats are you now?
Yes, 60.
You're 60?
I see. So you're going to have further expansion in the back.
Yes. Yeah.
Got it. That's why I was a little confused. Okay.
I have a question for staff. So they have a 60-seat license. Let's just say another operation opened in the rear of, and they were similar seats. Business was of 60 seats. They would be entitled to that currently now, right? And so the capacity in the bucket that I was talking about would still get filled the same way, right. 120 seats.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. So two venues back-to-back would have 120 seats with no parking requirement, but if one venue wants the 120, they get the fee.
Correct.
Okay.
Can I ask – sorry, this is not for you. I echo Brian's comments about you. I guess in Miami Beach there were the healthcare workers, which were the first COVID heroes, and then there was you guys. So thank you. No, I have questions for staff and the board.
Anyone from the public on this item?
We have one hand raised, Joseph Magazine.
Okay. Big Joe, you're up. Oh, you want to swear him in?
No, this is a legislative item.
Always need to be sworn in. Got it.
Correct.
Okay, Joe, you can lie today.
I would never. I apologize for the background noise. But I agree with Ms. Durham's comments about I'm not a fan of what seems like quasi-spot zoning. But then on the other hand, kind of a broader issue is it seems as if the trend of almost all progressive cities across the country is to make their urban areas more livable, more walkable. And it seems as if that should certainly be a goal of Miami Beach, if not more than anywhere else, given the climate and resiliency challenges that we're facing. The only way to go about that is by implementing policies that essentially force the hand of that, or at least facilitate that. And the county, progressive cities across the country, they're doing things to essentially minimize or in some cases even do away with parking requirements. And I think this actually would be the proper area to do so because it is close by to other residential areas, West Avenue, Alton Road. In fact, in tomorrow's Land Use Committee, there's an agenda item about similar policy goals. That being said, I'd just like to pivot for about 15 seconds and thank the chair, Mr. Brantley, and Mr. Jelpy for your tremendous public service. I recognize the hubris of speaking on behalf of an entire city, but on behalf of Miami Beach and its residents, I'd like to thank you all for your public service. I think you did so with both with honor and integrity and really conducted the meetings in a very good fashion that allowed for debate, allowed for public comment, and really facilitated what is best for the city. So, again, thank you to both members for your time and service to our city.
Thanks, Joe. Anybody else?
Matthew? It seems like he got disconnected. I've never seen that symbol before in here. Okay, I think he's back.
Hello, can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay, hi, Matthew Galtanoff, and I did send an email about this, and I appreciate the chair for referencing that. Generally speaking, I agree with that previous caller as well. Reducing parking minimums are a good thing, and they should be done, you know, where appropriate, especially throughout our city. But it's one thing to remove that burden upon the private property owner, but it's another thing to then place it upon the public. And we've seen, you know, in lots of cases throughout the city where valet is the predominant way in which a business conducts the parking for their patrons. And it really can have at times a negative impact to the surrounding areas. And I just want to make sure that if this is done and the parking requirement is either lessened or removed, that there are some guardrails put in place so that the burden is not placed upon the public and the neighbors to this fine establishment. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's all we have online. I don't know if there's anyone else in the audience.
Okay. Anybody? Melissa, are you here to speak on this item? No? Okay. We'll close the public hearing. Any other questions? I mean, obviously, there's just one owner in that area. So.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so I want to make this work.
Yeah.
The question I have is, you know, to Matthew's point, in addition to there's a lot of new buildings going up right there, and they're all sort of we've been reducing the parking on their requirements and putting the burden on these empty garages in the area. I get it that most of it, the healthcare center and the library, that's all, you know, during business hours. I think it's a little, it's a stretch to think that people are going to go from Maquilena to park their car in the Fifth Street garage. That's just not going to happen. I guess another concern is there are other restaurants in the area, or are there other restaurants in the area that are established since December 2022?
There are. I don't have the exact seat counts for them, but there are.
And it's between 5th and 10th on Alton on the east and west side, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So I guess so. A concern that I have is that everybody there starts expanding because that's a huge benefit to them. Mm-hmm. It makes the property next to each restaurant pretty valuable. So they start expanding, and then we have all this whole, you know, the same situation, but not everybody is willing to do the valet like they've offered to do. It's a bit of a concern for that area. I do see the need to sort of revitalize the area, and so I'm wondering if maybe the solution is to offer some sort of amendment or recommend some sort of amendment to encourage the valet parking without the need to replace the spaces and have designated spaces. Clearly, that's the impediment here. And for a restaurant that's only open at night, it doesn't make sense at all. And so I guess that one solution might be of some sort to, you know, have a requirement that the restaurant, if they are reaching 150 seats, have valet, you know, offer some sort of valet. I get the concern about, you know, people, you know, valet cars zooming in and out. I'm more concerned about people walking, you know, crossing Alton Road and going to that Fifth Street parking garage at night. And so, I don't know, it's just a thought. The other question I had was that if there is a if they sell the restaurant, and they have 150 seats, they get this exception, they sell the restaurant, can the new owner have the same benefit since the new owner technically
was? Yeah, it's an ordinance.
Mm-hmm. It's an ordinance. So, but they had to be been in operation since before, or since before December 2022. So
Right. As
long as they keep the same restaurant, they would get the benefit of it as
right.
well.
Yeah, they just transfer the ownership of the business tax receipt, and they can continue operating. But if the restaurant closes for more than 180 days and then tries to reopen, then they would lose that benefit.
Correct.
Yeah. I guess another concern is in a highly residential area like that, there are already limited spaces for residents. And so by not having valet or not requiring valet of some sort, you're taking up a whole bunch of spaces for residents in the area. So I don't know what everybody's thoughts are. I want to make this work, and so I'm not.
That's something you could offer.
Yeah, just so you know, that can be a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In this area, is there bifurcated residential parking versus public parking?
There usually is.
You mean the parking requirement?
There are residential areas where only residents can park on the street, and then there are open parking spaces. I think that may address
two residential mm-hmm. parking zones in that mm-hmm. area. Across the street is the Flamingo District, and on West Avenue. Parking district number 2, where after 6 p.m. only residents can park.
Right. Mm-hmm. Another thought that comes to mind in terms of understanding the impact of the cars that are coming to a particular restaurant. Since these restaurants that would be subject to this exception have been in operation for some time, there might be some ability to, hire a consultant, you know, do a questionnaire or find out where the patrons are coming from, so that we really know how many cars are impacting it. I mean, right now, I mean, the property's already bought, you know, rented and everything like that, so there's sort of in a pickle here. But I'm just saying, in the future, it's something, instead of having this, you know, just continuously removing parking spaces and parking space requirements for, it seems like every time there's an application, we just grant it and rubber stamp it. But having some ability to really understand where the patrons are coming from and how they're getting there, because, you know, even a place like Maculena, they're constantly named number one Italian restaurant. And so I'm sure there's people coming from all over. I'm sure they have a lot of people driving. So, but they're doing valet, so I'm not, you know, concerned.
Well, yeah, because
if you think about it,
if they expand and there's no parking, then people are going to get frustrated and they won't come. So I'm sure you're going
to
do whatever.
Well, that's the major thing, right? The way it is now, we have to pay the city over $37,000. And then we have to get a valet company that doesn't satisfy that, because that's our plan is always, with the added seats, to have this
valet
option to offer this amenity. So the cost of the $37,000 plus whatever we're going to be paying in valet is becoming insurmountable. We've been in permits for a year and 1 month. this is like literally we're at the finish line and we got hit with this in December.
So is it, and have you explored the pricing options of having valet but not designated spaces? Is it way less money than having designated spaces?
Yes.
So that's doable, you're saying?
Yes.
Well, our intention is to do that. Once we do the expansion, it's to offer the valet.
Right.
And also, if I might, there is the parking garage on 5th Street, and then there's also the parking garage that's on 9th in between West and Alton. That is public parking garage that a lot of our guests, which is much closer than and easier to walk to than the 5th Street.
I have a question since you guys are the operators. If you hire a valet company, how are you out of pocket? Like don't they charge the public and then?
They charge both.
They charge you to have their service and they charge
the way it works, if you allow them, the price is so high that it's.
So they charge you to provide the service even though they're charging the public?
You split the cost of the parking.
So we pay for half and then the.
And they get all the revenue?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's an added expense for you.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that worked
that
way.
So what you're thinking, we should open a valet company instead of a restaurant. Hindsight is.
Mr. Chair. Kareem. I like where Jonathan is going. I do have a peculiar perspective probably that parking is too cheap in Miami Beach, but that's for another conversation. But I do like where he's going. It seems like it's a code issue, ordinance issue, whatever, a law issue in Miami Beach around this required parking for this that's setting the stage for us to have this dialogue. But I just go back to what I said before in terms of if somebody's worried about, if that's our concern as a board, that giving these additional tables is going to result in, you know, more people converging on this area with cars, then we still aren't solving that problem. Because technically, I could go and now do the West Avenue side of their operation, rent it, get into a combination with them. You can't tell me I can't. I get 60 seats. They get 60 seats. I farm out my kitchen to them, serving my patrons. I think that would all be legal. And you still got 120 seats at the end of the day. So I'm not sure that this is going to solve what Jonathan's talking about, but I think what he's talking about makes sense. Maybe we should be changing the legislation outside of this ordinance to say that, hey, in the event that you have this particular area, these circumstances, that you can have shared parking, because there are lots of venues along between Alton and West Avenue going north from where you are that are businesses that don't operate at night, banks, so on and so forth, that may offer them the spaces, but they can't even take advantage of shared parking because of this hard code requirement. From what I'm hearing. So, and I think this is what you were getting at too, Gail, at the very beginning, but I just have a problem with we have something that's already established, and then we have a bright idea today, and then we're going to hold them up from moving forward. That just bothers me. I think I'm willing to move it, and we should also send a transmittal back to the commission for the bright idea we came up with today.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that, if I might. I think that if you're building something from scratch to be of a larger size, that's one conversation. For folks like you who have been operating already, those first 60 seats, like I said before, should not be counted in the requirement. So it should be from 61 to 150. And I think it makes absolutely no sense at all that you, who operate only in the evenings, should have to provide spots 24/7. I mean, it's not like anyone's coming to you saying, we're going to need emergency Italian food at, 9 a.m. Not that people don't have that emergency, but they're not probably going to come to you asking for that help. But so to change the overall ordinance to say that for businesses who only operate at a certain time of day or night, they can provide their parking requirement by sharing the resources with Bank of America or whoever else, Baptist, whoever might be in the neighborhood for those prescribed hours, and that they should only be required to provide parking in excess for those seats in excess of what they've already been doing. So it's not a perfect solution. It doesn't waive it entirely, but it addresses the goal of getting you what you need without breaking the bank and getting residents what they need of having a place to park without removing, or guests rather, removing parking access for people who live in the neighborhood. So I would very strongly encourage that transmission to the commission to to revise this accordingly.
And just so you all understand, all we do today is recommend. Mm-hmm. It's the commission that will ultimately, so I encourage you to go to that hearing as well. That's where the real, okay.
Brian, can I say one thing?
Yeah, of course.
Quick question. If you are able to have the potential to just secure a lease for off-site spaces during your hours of operation, is that something that you would be able to do?
I'm not sure. Because okay. when we would have to approach the neighbors and see who's interested and what that fee is, right?
You know? I would just say to the board, in regards to the recommendation, there's a lot of recent scholarship from Urban Land Institute all about how single-use parking garages that are designated for one audience that sit vacant on weekends and at nights, it's just a detriment to urban fabric. And what you want to do is have flexibility, not only for times of day, but times of the week. An 1111 garage obviously is a very high-end parking structure, but for structured parking, you see events hosted in these spaces, and it's not completely related to you. But I think it just makes sense that if you have hours of operation that are not 24 hours a day, why would we want vacant spots outside of that?
It's also problematic. What was posing to be problematic is that within 500 feet, right? Because that's very close.
So these are all, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so I would move this forward. I would make a motion to move this forward. And then the question that I have is do we want to have staff kind of bring this back before us to make recommendations how we can ease this burden on expanding restaurants and activate spaces, like Nick said, activate empty Baptist garages and whatever, or do we want to...
Well, is this on the agenda, the next commission agenda?
It should be, yes.
So we need to make a recommendation. So what we should do, Jonathan, is move it favorably with whatever suggestions, Tanya, you have.
Then I would say...
Go ahead and make a motion with your thoughts.
Wait, can I push back for a second? I don't think it's... I think we're not putting our fairness hat on. I think that other restaurants now in the area, or maybe citywide, will want the same thing, and then our parking in lieu fund will become zero. You know, who's paying the parking in lieu right now? Or providing valet parking to compensate for that? Barton G. So now they don't have to pay the parking in lieu fee anymore. Or provide valet parking. Cervici 105, Drunken Dragon, they're all nearby restaurants, and they're going to ask for the same thing. So it doesn't make sense for me that this restaurant should save $760 a week. That's what it comes out to. Can I ask you, what is your revenue per week? You said you're doing a $2 million renovation. That sounds pretty expensive, but you said you're unable to pay $576 a week for the parking in lieu fee. I know that doesn't compute with me. Do you know what your revenue is every week?
What our revenue?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Well, I think it's probably a lot. So I would urge
60 the board. Really not that much, but
no, for 100. I would urge the board that we pass this unfavorably and with a recommendation that the commissioner who sponsored this ordinance adjust it to make it maybe more fair for these guys to compromise on, maybe 100 seats instead of 150, or remove the requirement to have 24-hour valet spot, something like that.
Right, well, Jonathan was going to move it.
That's kind of what I was going for. I'm saying.
That's the opposite, actually.
Yeah, right. I'm recommending to move it forward with the recommendation to the commission to consider adding a valet requirement that does not require permanent, leased spaces, but that allows to utilize the surrounding areas not within 500 feet to activate unused parking spaces at night.
As a requirement that in order to be eligible for the waiver, is that what you're saying? That the restaurant would be required to have an agreement with a valet company?
I guess so. I mean,
okay.
It's not my...
We can include that.
But it's just a recommendation. So
you're right. We're passing this, but it's a recommendation to require that as part of this. If you are utilizing the 150 seats, to require some sort of valet service, and you know how they do it, you know, doesn't really matter. Really.
It goes along with a favorable recommendation as a recommendation.
Are we able, from a procedural perspective, to say that we recommend something favorably predicated on the adoption of the amendments?
I think the code refers to favorable or unfavorable. So I would say, you know, make a motion as to whether it's favorable or unfavorable, and then you can separately transmit additional recommendations.
And how is that recommendation recorded? Because when I look at the commission agenda, it just says favorable, unfavorable. It never says why we were favorable, why we weren't unfavorable, and what our recommendations are. So it basically goes into outer space, and the commissioners don't see that.
Well, and that's it. Yeah. When the board makes specific recommendations, we include them. So that's why I would suggest doing a separate motion. That way the motion will be reflected.
But in staff write-ups that get presented to the commission, and also we have our meetings a week before the commission, so it's not a lot of time for commissioners to absorb new information. But in staff analysis that I've reviewed, and I haven't reviewed every single one, to be clear about that, but in, I think, every one that I have reviewed, it says planning board recommended favorably or unfavorably, and doesn't often include the recommendations that were made.
If the board makes a separate vote, we absolutely include them. So if you want to make sure that something is reflected in the memo, I would recommend doing it.
But even coming from, you know, the city manager's office, it might have it as an attachment, but it doesn't have it in the body of the memo. And so I don't think, a lot of times, I don't think our recommendations get processed by people who are supposed to be taking information in, because they have 162 items on their agenda, which is untenable. So
Tanya, are you saying that it may get there to the city commission, but it's not because of the time, number one, between our meetings and the city commission meetings, and then folks' ability to get to new information and an agenda is challenging? Is that what you're saying?
I think because it's not usually incorporated into the body of the memo about an item, if it is attached at all, it's an attachment and might get
overlooked,
passed over. Yeah.
Okay.
That it's problematic.
Can we do something about that, Nick?
Well, I have to tell you, I review many of these memos, and the planning department drafts them, and I feel pretty strongly that we do include the board's recommendations. What comes up often is what Tanya pointed out, which is with this particular item is the first reading is scheduled on February 1st. The city commission agenda closes today for the February 1st agenda. So in instances like that, where planning board is right before the city commission meeting, the only way we can advise the commission is to do so verbally. And the planning director does that, often has to do it every month, because the planning board will have just transmitted
amendments. Okay, so Tom will communicate that to the commission.
Absolutely.
That's all we can ask for.
In his presentation, he will say the planning board recommended this, this, and this.
Okay.
And it will be in the second reading memo very clearly. If you make recommendations for specific text, it'll say planning board transmitted the ordinance with a favorable recommendation and with the following modifications, and he will outline them in the report.
And Nick, why, just procedurally, why can't we pass it favorably with the following recommendations versus favorably and then a whole nother motion?
You can. I just, the contingent on, I don't think works. The favorable contingent on.
I agree with that. I don't think we can contingent on to the commission, but we can recommend. I'm just asking, why do the recommendations have to be in a separate motion?
Why is it an up or down? And then a second.
As opposed to saying we recommend favorably with these recommendations.
You can include both in one motion as long as it's not contingent on, because the requirement is it favorable or unfavorable.
All right. So we have a motion to move it favorably with a recommendation that, and I think you memorialized it with the valet parking and the spaces and the date. And then Tanya, I think, did you have one other?
Yeah. Can you just read off what you have so far?
So just to require that valet service, valet parking service be provided by the applicant.
But what if there's a better solution that's not valet parking? What if people out across the street have a parking lot and they're happy to have it used for the hours of operation, and that's not valet parking. We also don't, just by saying valet parking doesn't address the fact that we recommend making a contingent on their hours of operation
So you can say valet parking or has the ability to access underutilized parking spaces.
Okay, and can we add in for the hours of operation only?
Yes.
And can we add in not for the first 60 seats?
Well, then it would be not for, it would be only for the additional seats.
Right, starting with the 61st seat.
But that's a whole, that's changing it materially. So, Jonathan, are you okay with that?
Well, but we're not telling them how much valet parking they're required.
No, I'm talking about the, so Tanya is suggesting that the in lieu of parking fee not be completely eliminated, that it be applied to only in excess of 60 seats.
Yeah, sure. I don't, yeah, that's fine.
So they would be paying the fee for everything above 60 seats is what the...
Well, that's in the, that's one of Tanya's recommendations.
I think that gets complicated because then if you're getting above 150, that doesn't apply, right?
The way it's drafted, if you exceed the 150, you have to provide the parking requirement for the entire space.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. I think we're trying to do a lot of legislation on an item, and I don't think we've thought about all the new ideas yet. I mean, I think that this is great, but now we're trying to...
My valet thinking is to protect residents in the area to give, you know, so that they don't take up all the resident parking.
Yeah, I think everything was fine. I think the issue is whether we add the last recommendation, which is...
But I think if somebody's been operating a business with 60 seats with no parking requirements and it hasn't been historically an issue in the neighborhood for residents, we shouldn't penalize them.
No, it's the opposite. I'm saying you're saying to still impose it on the additional seats. The question is that what John – in other words, the without your recommendation, it would be we recommend it favorably with the imposition of a recommendation with valet, the hours, whatever – and then what you're suggesting is a significant addition, which is still impose the parking fee above 60 seats. And so the question is, do we want to add that as a recommendation or not?
I don't think we should impose.
All right, so that's your motion. So let's just see if it carries.
Wait, so does not, but it's still, if you're over 150 seats, then it absolutely triggers the parking in lieu.
For everything.
But it's still a huge burden on them. Even if you take away the 60 seats, it's still prohibitive.
60 times 800 or 40,000.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You don't want to include that in your motion.
Correct. I don't want. Sorry, I misunderstood.
So for now, we have a motion without that additional recommendation. We have to see if it passes. So do we have a second?
Second.
Okay.
Okay, so motion by Mr. Frieden, second by Mr. Brantley. And that's a motion favorable recommendation with modification that they...
Recommendation
that they be required to provide valet parking service or has the ability to utilize underutilized parking spaces during the hours of operation. So, roll call, Ms. Pott?
No.
Mr. Brantley?
Yes.
Mr. Cement is absent. Ms. Durham?
No.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Jelpy?
Yes.
Four motion passes.
Can I just say... You know, if there's a business, there's underutilized parking, there's parking available that is not used, why not afford them the opportunity to use it?
Yeah. They can use it. They just can't use it as required parking.
But why not?
If it is 500 feet away, they can. That's what the bodega does.
No, but to lease those spaces, they have to, based on the code, they have to have 24-hour spaces that Baptist Hospital is not going to give them. But
there's empty parking spaces sitting there. Why not allow them to use it?
Because they have to be dedicated 24/7 based on the code.
But that was one of the
so
things
what we
recommend.
Just did kind of circumvents that and allows them to use this shared parking. And I think it makes sense. I think that there's still some work to be done here. And maybe the planning board, in my opinion, you know, I won't be here next month, but, you know, should take this up at some point to really comprehensively think about this in the way that Mr. Frieden, discussed it earlier. I think, you know, this is a real opportunity, right, to really think through some of these. Again, it's disjointed code. It was one thought that happened at X part of one period of time, and then time went on, and then a new idea surfaced, and then legislation was, you know, created around that idea, similar to what we're doing today. Now time has gone on, and now we're creating, and it's still disjointed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have an opportunity to bring all those 3 points in my example of time together into one cohesive legislation, perhaps.
So the way the code works, it only requires you to count a parking space as required parking for one use. We do have an underutilized parking program where if you're not utilizing those spaces at night, you can provide them as underutilized parking, and a valet operator can utilize those spaces at night, but you cannot count them as required parking. So they, if you have a restaurant that has no parking requirement, they want to offer valet services, they can utilize the parking at Baptist, for example, if they want to declare those underutilized parking spaces, but they cannot be counted as required parking for that restaurant.
But so
I'm just saying how it is. I'm not telling
right,
you
and
an
so
opinion.
Maybe that's something that we mm-hmm. should take up and recommend to the commission. I'd like to see or hear maybe from staff as to the genesis behind that rule, but I think that it's a good, you know, thing to bring up, and I'm sure it would relieve a lot of the stress.
Fewer structured parking spaces that are used more completely throughout the day and the week would be a huge benefit. Mm-hmm. And if they're there, it's incentivized using them.
And then the other requirement is if you're not in a historic district, the parking can be located off-site within 1,500 feet. If it's a historic district, I believe you have 1,200 feet to locate required parking. So
these Euclidean codes, boy, I tell you,
it's definitely not easy to read our parking code.
So
it could use improvements.
So for next month, could you provide sort of a compendium, if you will, of our mm-hmm. fractured parking requirements, so that we can take a look and see if there's an opportunity to synthesize things? And
would you like to schedule a discussion item on parking?
Well, I think you got the next one. You got a discussion item on special events. You guys might want to move it out. The only reason I say that is discussion items, they get lengthy.
I would narrow to your point. I would. It's up to the chair when we want to put it, but I would narrow the review to that specific issue, mm-hmm. so to the underutilized nighttime parking spots.
Okay.
But, you know, because if we go and do a whole comprehensive review about the parking, we're going to get bogged down and all that stuff. So my suggestion would be to look at that one thing of how we can utilize nighttime garages, that especially with all these new office buildings going in and you know, we'll have parking that's open during the day. How can we incentivize new businesses to come and open up here without the need for parking if they're going to be nighttime restaurants?
Residential parking is residential only from 6 to 6.
Right.
And then everybody can use it. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's empty.
Right. Yeah, the only reason I suggested that, Mr. Chair, is it's just I think that this is probably applicable to more than just this scenario around the beach. And in order to give staff the proper time to really enlighten the board about that, I think you need to give it, you know, move it out another meeting, because I just think you're going to just put a Band-Aid on something without really diving into this.
When is the March meeting?
March 28th.
Okay.
And right now we have no private applications for March. We may get some ordinances
so
referred.
March
but
would be good.
So let's put it on March.
Okay.
And I'm going to send maybe to you very brief articles about new parking trends that are very helpful.
All right. Jack, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
We know you guys have a million things to consider. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being great operators, really.
So we'll schedule that discussion on underutilized parking for March.
Okay. All right. We have your lunches are here. We have one other item. Do you want to grab your lunch or do you want to just go to the item?
Should we just knock out the last item?
Okay. Planning Board file PB220566, alternate member category for land use boards.
Okay, so this is an ordinance that was referred to the Planning Board that would establish a new alternate member position on 3 of our land use boards, on the Design Review Board, Historic Preservation Board, and Planning Board. It would not apply to the Board of Adjustment because they are established under the city charter, and so that would require voter approval to amend that section of the charter. So what this ordinance would do, it creates one new alternate, allows for one alternate member to be appointed. The alternate member must be a resident of the city for at least a year and satisfy at least one of the criteria of the regular membership categories. The alternate member would be eligible to vote when one or more regular voting members of the applicable board have a conflict on an application or is absent from the meeting. In the event that a regular voting member from an applicable board resigns or is removed from the board, the alternate member may take their place until a new regular voting member is appointed by the city commission. We did some research into what other cities do in this situation, and we found that a lot of them do have alternate member categories. Fort Lauderdale has three, City of Hollywood has two, Town of Palm Beach has three, City of Tampa has two, City of St. Petersburg has three alternate members for its boards, and City of Miami Springs has one alternate member.
That's interesting. I have a question. So when you have three alternates and one person has to recuse themselves, which of the three get put into that position?
That is an interesting question.
It's so bizarre. And secondly, do they all attend all the meetings like a regular board member?
They do.
Or do they get told in advance there's going to be an absence, you need to show up, or...
They do generally attend all the meetings, and so that way, if something happens,
they get to sit through all this without a vote.
Yeah.
Now, is it a requirement under the ordinance that's being proposed today?
The absentee requirements apply the same to the alternate members, so yes, they would have to be here.
Okay.
But what's the current rule? I think if you're a current planning board member or any board member, you can miss two meetings max.
Correct.
Right. And if you miss the third, you're off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is this become
an issue where this ordinance
just,
it
comes up on occasion? It's not. I mean, today we have one member absent. We had one meeting about a year ago. I believe Commissioner Fernandez had just resigned because he became a commissioner, and then Mr. Weider resigned in a morning, and we had to cancel the meeting because we didn't have a quorum. So it has come up. It doesn't come up often, but right. You know, it has happened on occasion. Or somebody has to recuse themselves because they have some sort of a conflict of interest. So it's up to you. I mean, it's.
But if one person has to recuse them, you still have six members voting, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an extraordinary case.
Yes.
Yeah. I just find it so.
I think it's a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. I would unequivocally.
I'm sorry. Before we, is there anyone here to speak on it?
We have one member with one online, Mitch Novick.
Oh,
Mitch.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm getting some feedback. Okay, it's fixed. Just a couple of questions. Would an alternate be precluded from speaking on issues? And the other question is, does this include a free parking pass? Thanks.
In other words, like when we're debating up here, does the alternate participate or only if there's an absence or a recusal?
Well, I think the way it's drafted, since attendance would be required, right? I think if the alternate is present, I think the alternate can speak.
But it doesn't say that, because it says if there's an absence or a recusal.
Well, in that case, the alternate can vote.
Okay, so they could still speak. Okay.
So you would have the seven voting members of the planning board, plus whatever it is, one or three alternates, all opining, and only seven... Right. Voting, and those additional people would have to recuse themselves if they had a conflict and attend every meeting and fill what kind of vacancy, what kind of requirements. I mean, we all fill certain, you know, except for the resident, well, even the resident, we all fill certain roles or qualifications on this board. So what would the alternates have to fill? Like which
any one of the requirements.
By the way, Mitch, were you finished?
Sorry, Mitch.
Okay, is he off? Okay. I'm assuming...
Wait. I'm back. It's an interesting discussion. Don't forget to talk about or discuss parking benefits. Thanks.
And then what I understood from the planning director is the intent is that the alternate would only need to attend a meeting if they were needed. So if the board does transmit...
Yeah, I wouldn't want.
Is this an issue on any of the other boards, or is it
the board?
It's not an issue here.
The board where I've seen it personally become an issue on occasion is the Historic Preservation Board, because the votes for the last couple of years have been sometimes close, and so if you're down one or two members, but that's where I've seen it the most.
Okay, and then so in addition, you'd have people who only need to show up if their vote is needed because somebody's going to be absent, who then therefore quite possibly have not been following the discussion, or you know, if this is an issue that was continued or something, and
well, they're required to attend all meetings.
I have a lot of. I'm just uncertain about this. I do think it's a solution in search of a problem, but I do understand, you know, some of the concern that may have come with the item coming before the planning board. I mean, there's just so many questions. How long does the alternate member serve? You know, what is counted against them in a term? I mean, because then you could be an alternate member and never really be necessarily a member of the planning board, and then you can have, you know, 10 years, you might be up here 15 years. I'm not sure that I understand that it is absolutely necessary. I do understand how it may play out in other boards. I would think that there would be a response for this would be just a more stringent enforcement of the two missed meeting rule. Mm-hmm. And then if it was really a concern that folks are missing meetings, they're causing legislation to be held up, you miss your two meetings, you're off. And enforce it in such a way that you get those people replaced on the board immediately by the commission. So anyway, I'm not going to support it. My vote won't be to send it favorably. So I'm gonna move to transmit this unfavorably.
I'll second.
Okay.
I'm surprised that it's so common in these other towns.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that.
This just goes to show how much you guys love working with each other.
Call the vote, Nick.
This board is great.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Brantley, second by Ms. Bott. Roll call, Ms. Bott.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Roll call, Ms. Bott.
Yes.
Mr. Brantley.
Yes.
Mr. Cement is absent. Mr. Durham.
Unfavorable, yes. Is that
correct?
Okay. Correct. This is unfavorable. Mr. Elias.
Yes.
Mr. Frieden.
Yes.
Mr. Jelpy.
Yes.
Motion passes. We will transmit it with an unfavorable recommendation.
To Mitch Novak's point, I think any board member who serves their entire limit when their term limited out should have lifetime free parking.
Like a commissioner.
Would you like to transmit that?
Wait, can I get that? Can we get that?
So with that, before we adjourn, I also want to echo a lot of the people's comments. Kareem, Nick, it's a very sad day because I've served with you guys on two different boards now, and not only are you great people, but your contributions, your knowledge, your compassion, your empathy is second to none. So it's been an honor to work with you and serve with you, and we're going to miss you a lot. And I do hope you'll come once in a while when you have a passion about an item and speak to us. And I know everyone else would like to congratulate you as well, but thanks for all your service.
Yes.
Thank you all.
Yeah.
Thank you all very much. Keep in touch, maybe we'll see you on another board in the future. So.
And
that was the sales pitch.
Yeah. I would just like to add.
Just for the architect.
I would like to just add that I was appointed to the board 2 years ago, and you guys were very kind and generous, and without violating any ethics rules, sort of showed me the ropes and, you know, kept me aligned and helped me understand how the process works. So I really appreciate that. And the other significant skill that isn't always exhibited by people in public roles is that you listen and are fair. And that is a rare trait, and it is really, really appreciated.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Okay.
With that, we will adjourn.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Thank you all.